hear you. Sorry.
Okay.
Love Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tunnell, and I thank you for joining us on this evening, September 30th, and the music decided it wanted to come back on. I apologize for that. Again, I'm your host, Janice Tunnell, and tonight we have an interview with celebrity hairstylist Kaya Wright, and from what I understand, Kaya was going to be cutting it a little close, so we're still waiting for her to call in. In the meantime, Denise, our co-host, has a couple of news items.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Beauty Lounge. First, I just want to quickly start with Beauty Talk, the web series. Beauty Talk, the web series, will premiere its second episode tonight, so you can go out to www.youtube.com/illusionscosmetics, or you can do a search on Beauty Talk, and it'll bring you to our channel so that you can see the web series. So we have episode 2 out there. And we hope you all enjoy it. It's an interview with celebrity makeup artist and instructor Nakia Fuller of All About Face Academy. And the winner of episode number 1's giveaway is Carmel Myers. So she will be receiving a beauty package from us. And also, we just also want to let you know some pretty good news about Beauty Talk. Beauty Talk was accepted to the Mid-Atlantic Film Festival, which will take place in a couple weeks here in October. So we're excited about that and just, you know, hoping and praying for good things to come for Beauty Talk. And the very last thing is October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so Illusions Cosmetics is selling its Anne lip gloss and lipstick for $10, and 100% of the proceeds will go to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Fund. So go out if you want to place an order for the Anne lip gloss and lipstick. It's not listed on our website, but you can call 866-436-7409. And that's it for tonight.
Thank you very much. I just want to remind everybody that the guest call-in number, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, is 914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399. I wanted to say, while we're waiting for Kaya, we have Suzanne. How are you, Suzanne?
I'm good. I'm good.
Welcome
and
back.
And we want to apologize to you because last week I understand you were on the line trying to get through so you can give us this wonderful HD info that we really need, and we couldn't get to you because the lines were tied up. So
oh, I understand completely. But I'm sure it was a great show, too.
Yeah, it really
so
was.
So all's good. Okay, so about, you know, this is my little regular spot here, HD Technology and Technique Update. So if you can recall back the last time I was on, I talked about and shared about my experience on a video shoot that I was on that used two Canon high-definition single-lens, digital single-lens reflex cameras. And, you know, the fiasco I went through with that, I mean, it was good. It was really good, but in the end. But you need to know that these HDSLRs are definitely becoming what I call the new darlings come a-courtin' in the industry because you get a twofer, meaning two for one price. One camera package can now shoot stills and capture video in a broadcast quality of 1080p to 24 to 30 frames per second in HD. Okay, that's phenomenal for what these cameras are doing. There's a whole slew of them coming down the pipeline and rolling out in the next 6 months. And not only for 35 millimeter, but medium format still cameras as well. These cameras will be able to handle and interface with all kinds of current and future lens designs because of universal adapters that are available and always have been available, but especially for now the different kinds of things that are coming out. So these cameras can be beefed up with a myriad of adjustments for still and video interfaces never before done with digital SLRs. In the past 18 months alone, we've seen the biggest leap ever of high-resolution technology move into this acquisition format. So now we have HD 3D, HD SLRs, and now add to that LED lighting, and some of you who have been shooting any kind of corporate video or anything out there are seeing this kind of lighting is boldly moving into the HD arena. This is definitely a crossover success from live theater realm, where LED is a commonplace lighting tool, especially with the ellipsoidal lights, you know, those long tube light lights that have long-range projection capability for live theatrical events. These lights are definitely becoming very, very popular for HD. And I didn't get to mention this last time, but on the shoot that I was telling you about, all the lighting was LED banks spots. There were no tubes or lamps at all. He used all LED banks. And for those of you who are not familiar with production LED lights, these look like little round illuminating dots that are lined up together in rows. And the rows of lights can be configured into different size fixtures depending upon the amount of light spill that, you know, the DP requires for the shoot. And so we just had LED banks on this shoot. The great thing about LEDs is that you have greater control over the light spill because of the way these light rows are packaged, and it's going to become more and more commonplace because for the lighting guys, it eliminates what we call wavelength spikes in color temperature. So in other words, it's going to be more accurate and more constant in color temperature. They also use much lower wattage of energy, and they hardly put out any heat compared to conventional, you know, bank lighting. I'd like to talk more about this later on in another chat because it really does have an impact on makeup, especially in a macro lens situation in video, which I found myself in. Even some fixed studio lighting for broadcast now is integrating LEDs into their schematics, and they're now commonplace for underlighting or even eye lights. So I'm wrapping up my point here because of all this great advancement in HD technology, the big thing I see coming down the pipeline, and this is just my own personal projection, this is not by any means, you know, industry standard, but just from what I see and what I stay alert to, is that more and more TV shows and movies are going to be shot in HD and transferred to film. Not only because it saves on principal photography budget, and this was proven in the last season of the season finale of House, but video can be shot at the same frames per second as film, and it can be manipulated so much now in post to take things out to be even more film-like that the average eye is not going to be able to tell the difference. That's how I see this coming down. But you know, film has always been far more expensive to shoot, you know, with dailies and the time and cost it takes to develop a film and review it, and then there's always reshoots or pickups, which adds to the cost of film over video. So it's making more practical budgetary sense for film to be basically a transfer medium for the final edit and release rather than to use film for principal photography. The fact that video gets a 0.10% knockdown in the transfer process makes it even more attractive as a cheaper transfer medium, and that takes even more edge off the flatness of video. So, because of the fiasco in my last shoot, I spent the money and upgraded our Studio HD camera with the addition of an HD macro lens conversion lens that has a 5:1 magnification capability in a 1080p format. So every year I try to add something new to the HDMU workshop, and this feature is going to be really scary to a lot of makeup artists coming to the workshop who are, you know, venturing into HD for the first time. It's a real eye-opener, and I mean that most sincerely for anyone who has not experienced an HD camera that has been converted with a macro lens in HD. So look out. It's going to be fun. And that's okay. My technology part.
Now, do you have anything for the product side of HD?
Do I have anything for the product side, meaning... You mean my tips thing here?
Yeah.
I'm going to move into tips. I just thought maybe I would see what y'all thought of that. But, well, one of the things that I'm seeing, especially now that, you know, I'm been up into this macro sensation, shall we call, is that if you airbrush... I strongly recommend that you match your talent skin in a pigmented cream base to get an exact reading and match in skin tone, meaning your temperature, your undertone, and the value or the complexion shade, and then take that color and match it, that color result, and match it to the airbrush color, even if you have to mix it down. You need to get really, really accurate. You will get a much better outcome in your application that looks more native to skin in HD, especially if you have variable lighting conditions. This is probably one of the reasons why I really love Graftobium so much, because it is an exact match from airbrush to cream, and, of course, that cuts down time considerably in matching skin when I airbrush. So, you know, I know people kind of just generalize, well, airbrush covers 2 to 3 ranges of skin tones, but you know what? You need to be accurate. And that's why I've just really gone to matching creams first to skin and then get an accurate reading there and then use the airbrush version of that, which Graftobium makes it very easy for me to do. But that's just a good suggestion. Another thing is, you know, this is kind of contrary to a popular makeup artist technique that you spray the makeup down with water to set it. And in HD, this actually flattens the makeup from the top down, and it takes some of the life out of, the emerging life out of it, rather than allowing the makeup to become inherently more rounded when it is naturally warmed up to wear by the temperature of the skin. So I just don't use water anymore to set it. I just wait for the, you know, for it to just blend naturally with the skin. So it really does make the makeup look flatter. So anyway, those are my two tips, and hope that helps.
Go ahead. I had a question as well.
I just had a quick question. I want to go back to what you were saying about the pigmented cream base. You're saying match the person's skin with a pigmented cream base, then match.
In other words, a cream, like a traditional cream. Uh-huh.
Right.
Get an accurate reading. You get a more accurate reading in your color that way, rather than trying to just guess with the airbrush color. Because people think, you know, airbrush colors, well, one shade can cover 2 to 3 skin tones. But you know what? In close-up HD, if it isn't matched really well, you can see it.
Okay.
So I've just been suggesting to people that if you do a match in cream, or I've been suggesting to artists, if you do a match in cream and then make sure that airbrush color matches that cream color, and you'll get a much better application in color matching.
Well, what if you're using a line that has, of course, the airbrush makeup but doesn't have a cream?
I know. I thought about that. Believe me, I did think about that. And, you know, this is just something that I am sharing. You know, I know that it's
right.
Not possible.
Right.
But it might mean that you have to be a little more of a cosmetic chemist and mix down those airbrush colors to match those creams. You see what I'm saying? So you're going to have to mix down the airbrush colors to be a little bit more accurate, because, you know, there's some companies out there that might, you know, have like 8 to 10 steps in a color range, and skins are more than 8 to 10 steps. There's more color ranges out there, so that behooves you to be a little more of a cosmetic chemist and maybe go half step or quarter step your foundation colors in airbrush, so that you get a more accurate match to the skin. It's just a good rule of thumb. I'm not saying, you know, you have to do that, but that's just something that I make doubly sure of now, especially having gone through this macrolens situation where I could see skews in color, even in a little bit in brow colors, that close. I mean, it's like it's literally you're just up close, and your depth of field is just focused like on half a brow. That's how close it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it really shows the color, and I felt really good because my foundation matching was very, very accurate, and I had to kind of shift the brow color just a little bit. I didn't quite get it accurate.
Right.
So, you know, it made me reassured myself, because I really do match skin in cream. I've always done that first before I've airbrushed, just so I can just quickly get it done and get it done really, really fast. And then if somebody's a half step between two colors I'm just pulling Graftovian out because that's really all I use, but if they're a half step in between two colors, well, then I know I'm going to do half and half of the color equivalent in the airbrush. And it's just fast. It's just really, really fast. And it's all about quickness, too, you know.
Right. Well, Suzanne, also I wanted to know, because I just ran across this question the other day. Someone
mm-hmm.
was asking about it. Do you ever use a combination of cream and the airbrush? Do you ever, conceal, like, under eye with cream and then airbrush? Or do you ever,
do
the whole?
I will use airbrush as a concealing overlay for instead of powdering.
Mm-hmm.
But I do all of my what I call orifice work around the eyes and around the nose
mm-hmm.
and, you know, around the edges of the mouth with the color equivalent cream. That's why when I match the cream, I will use that to do any under eye work, under the nose work, anywhere there's an orifice, like in the ears or that kind of thing, because you really shouldn't be spraying the airbrush that closely.
Right. Exactly.
I don't use the airbrush for anything other than a transparency tool anyway, or an opacity tool. So that makes it very clean looking. It pulls the whole look together. You apply your creams, of course, very, very sparingly. You work them transparently, but it makes it the overall look very, very smoother. Far more comfortable to your talent because you're not getting up close and into them with the airbrush. It's safer too,
mm-hmm.
and it just looks better.
What about applying the entire face with cream? And then airbrush it over.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will do what I call the triangle area, because everybody is more than one color in their skin, you know.
Gotcha.
And I kind of divide the face out into what we call the triangle area, and that's from the eyes to down to the corners of the mouth. And sometimes I will put cream in there, and then I'll airbrush the rest of the face, or I will use the airbrush as a concealing overlay, or use it as a perimeter around the face. Especially, it depends on which kind of camera I'm working in. So if I'm working in a Sony, which really pulls hard on redness. It's just an inherently red atmosphere camera, a cool atmosphere. So if I've got a talent that is in the cool zone, shall we say, and you really want to push everybody to warm as much as you possibly can, So if I've got a cool undertone, I will take a neutral or a warm, and I'll just kind of put this faint halo around them to keep them natural, you know, warmed up without obviously looking warm, so it doesn't, you know, you can turn them orange if you're not careful, but just, you know, kind of that little trick.
Okay, I have a question, but if you all can hold just 1 second, there's a caller on the line, and I just want to verify who the caller is. Hello, caller? Okay, so I guess this caller is not our guest. No, I guess not. Okay. I had a question because I'm listening to you. I'm listening to you just talk about all this. And do you think, in your opinion, that airbrushing is kind of best for HD?
Airbrushing is one of the tools in your overall brush skill arsenal. It is not the tool. It really depends. It's a case-by-case basis. For me, it's a case-by-case basis. It just depends on what the skin needs if it's a really nice, flawless complexion and it needs very little correction work and it would just benefit by taking down shine without adding a whole lot of color, especially with men. Airbrushing is really great because you can apply it so transparently at a very low PSI to where you're just taking the edge off the skin without really having it read as makeup. And that's the one thing you don't want that to happen is you don't want it to read as makeup.
Right.
So airbrushing, you know, the airbrush is simply an extra degree of transparency that you really can't get with hand applied to an extra degree of opacity that you really can't get with hand applied because it's hand applied is kind of finite. It only goes so far before you start smearing it, mm-hmm. and it just comes back up again. Whereas the airbrush is pixelated dots,
right?
And you can actually just take the shine off without hardly adding any color to the face, which is I've never been able to achieve by hand. It's just the nature of the tool. So it's not the tool, but to me it is an important tool, and I believe that everyone who is doing a fair amount of HD work should have this skill in their brush skill arsenal because it's very versatile to be able to do different types of transparent work, concealing overlay work. It's just very, very versatile.
Right.
Okay, I have a caller. I can't identify the number. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Tim.
You need some Thai food?
Suzanne, do you know Tim?
Do I know who?
Do you know Tim Buchanan?
Say that again.
Introduce yourself, Tim.
Hi, Suzanne. I'm Tim.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm good.
Cool.
This is Suzanne Patterson. She comes on every other week with her HD technology and technique update.
I know. I've been listening. I mean, she's sending her knowledge of the lighting and the cameras is amazing.
Are you airbrushing on your show?
No.
No.
I'm not in airbrushing. I'm not big on airbrushing. You know, for me, the only client that really airbrushes is, you know, Janet Jackson. That would be it. That's the only one that really likes it. Yeah. So for me, I could do. I still could do makeup with the traditional way.
Right.
You know. So
yeah,
I think
the last time you came on, you said that you guys weren't shooting in HD.
No, we're not in HD. My show, I'm on One Tree Hill, and sorry, I'm just reading the what's that thing called?
The chat in the beauty lounge.
The chat in the thing. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Denise. Yeah, the nut called in. No, but my show is still, we're not in HD, and it's one of those situations where, it's, you know, it's not necessary. I mean, for us to get that, to that genre just yet. You know.
And you know, to be fair, you know, it's not a 100% acquisition mandated format yet, because there's still a lot of turnover that's happening. And,
I totally agree with that. And the problem I have with, I know a lot of people who airbrush because it becomes the it's a new cool thing to do. And I know a lot of, I've hired a lot of people who comes in with airbrush machine and cannot match skin color, it's
right.
You know, one of those things where it's like, instead of being an extension to your craft, extension to your brush, is now, airbrush now.
Yeah.
And
I totally agree. Right.
And for me, that would be the last thing that I mean, if somebody, I call somebody up to come and work, and I said, I only airbrush, that's the only thing I can do, that's the quickest way for me to hang up on you.
Right.
You know, because, you know, it's like, I've done a lot of shows, I've done shows in HD and things like that, and I'm still able to achieve the airbrush quality of work with my with the traditional tools, you know.
Right.
You know, but one thing I love to do is actually do a light cream foundation, highlight, contour, and everything else. And then what I would do is I would actually take the airbrush color
mm-hmm.
and just dust it over to pixelate everything and blend everything out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where, for me, that's one of the things that I love doing with that.
And that's what
you
I
know?
Mean by the concealing overlay, that he
yeah.
described
yeah.
that. Mm-hmm, that he's
yeah.
describing concealing overlay. Yep.
Yeah.
It ties
that,
it all
to
up.
Me, that's, yeah, that kind of like just blends everything in, and
mm-hmm.
it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the thing, and I hope that, you know, the listeners actually, you know, when, because, you know, like all the makeup companies, I mean, a lot of makeup companies now are so into the airbrushing thing right now. So it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's great. It has its place. It has its time. But don't forget about the education on the quality of your techniques, your basic techniques. I think that, you know, it should just enhance what you can do rather than take over what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, learn your craft, you know, learn it well. Make sure you can hand paint someone very well before you start saying, I only airbrush.
Well, I think he makes a really important point, is that know your color theory.
Yeah.
And know how
exactly.
it translates in HD, because if you can't match temperature and value, which is the undertone of the skin, which
mm-hmm.
is warm, neutral, or cool, because those HD cameras will call you out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, if you don't match undertone, you're going to have a peach or a coral look if they're in the wrong temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you match the value, you know, how light or dark, because HD will call you out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I think you should be doing that anyways.
Exactly.
You should totally be doing that anyways, whether you're working on, you know, a show to shoot in 16 or on the red camera or whatever camera is out there, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I feel that's how I feel. It's like you should be able to do that. You should read people undertone and, you know, color correct and or whatever else that needs to be done. You know.
And where you, even if you don't work in media, I mean, if you're even just, you know, doing bridal or salon, you know, you still need good skills. You're still going to walk out in daylight, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And daylight is the hardest light
the hardest
on the skin.
Uh-huh. Oh, I totally agree on that one.
I had a visual as soon as you said daylight.
No, it's like, I remember one time, it's like I was working on Nutty Professor 2, you know. I had to change the whole light, and in the trailer, got Janet done for the whole thing. Walked outside, I looked at her, I was like, holy shit, get your ass back in here now. I mean, that daylight just killed me, and, you know, and then it was like, totally had to, you know, to you know, go back and work things out to make
right.
sure that, you know, the color's right.
that's the biggest downfall of them providing lighting, is that it is tungsten.
Mm-hmm.
And tungsten it has only half of the spectrum. And you need full spectrum lighting to be able to see everything in the skin. If you're only doing it in tungsten lighting, and which doesn't have any green or blue rays, and it's just yellow and red rays, you're seeing the warmth of the skin, and it's taken out any coldness that it has.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of seeing the even part, from top to bottom, you have to be able to have full spectrum light in there. And I make them, even in my studio here in D.C., it's rated at 56 Kelvin temperature, which allows for any color skews. Everyone has a small, tiny degree of color blindness all the way up to, full color blindness. But everyone sees color differently. And the only way you can get everyone to see that same tonality as color is that the higher it is in the full spectrum range, the more it compensates for any colorblind skews, so everybody, as the temperature in the full spectrum hits its high point, you see that is the maximum amount of light that you can see any color at, which even people with color skews, even however tiny they are, will be able to see that hue in its purest form. So I keep mine at 56K, and I've done some experiments where I've had it right at 32, and then I'll take it over, I'll have somebody recolor at 32, and then I'll take them in at 56, and we'll say, oh, no, that color looks different than it did at 32 in their eye, whereas everybody's different. It's an interesting experiment. So I've settled on 56K as a means for everybody to be able to see that hue at the same temperature. And that helps a lot, because if you're able to see skin tonalities, all the way through from the undertone to the top tone, and you do your makeup in that, and you walk outside, and it looks just as even as it did under the lights in the trailer or the makeup room or wherever wherever you're doing the makeup. So lighting is really the start of makeup. Good lighting is the start of makeup, absolutely. But
I totally agree. Totally agree with that. And also, if the people work on a TV show, on a movie, don't be afraid to go to your DP and your gaffer and tell them, how are you lighting this? And actually have them work with your transpo captain, and have them get the proper lighting for your trailers.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people are so afraid because of, oh, my gosh, I can't talk to my seat.
I agree. Absolutely.
I totally think
absolutely.
We people should. And also the other thing is, I've said it before and I'll say it again, is like, go take some lighting classes.
Mm-hmm. Take Sarah's lighting class.
Right, I was going to say. take Sarah's lighting class.
Mm-hmm.
Go take some photography.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken photography classes. I've taken lighting
mm-hmm.
classes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I have clients that their manager would not let them go on camera until I check out the lights and make sure that they look great, And I have done jobs where I actually walk in there and relight the whole thing, It's pretty much another notch in your belt that you could have.
Yep.
And a lot of times when you're actually able to go up to DPs and speak to them in their own languages, it you actually gain a lot more respect from them. And it's like, if there's no classes around you, find a photographer, pay them a couple $100 and call it a day, and speak to them about it and actually, And when you're doing a shoot, when you're doing test shoot, whatever, ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid.
And they can
exactly.
come to HCMU because we talk an awful. I mean, they work in different kinds of lighting as well at HCMU. And rule of thumb: if you're on a set, and the lighting guy brings you a tungsten, you ask him for a quarter blue. You just throw a quarter blue filter on that, and that will kick up that will give you full spectrum light. So And I know a lot of people, a lot of artists, you know, go to set and ask for lighting, but if you're doing it in tungsten, ask for a quarter blue and throw that on there, and you will have full spectrum light. Or better yet, carry a quarter blue. If you don't have a light, just carry a quarter blue filter and throw it on the light, and you will have full spectrum light to do your makeup in. You'll be able to see all the
tonality. If I remember correctly, so then you sell some type of lighting in
this? Yep, I sure do. That is one of our big, big sellers when I put this light package together about 5 years ago for makeup artists who needed portable light, a portable lighting capability that wasn't, a huge light on a stand kind of thing. And it's a big seller for us. And so many people have written and said, this has just been wonderful. You know, it's really, really helped me improve my makeup. And it is, makeup starts with light. You've got to have the right light. You've got to be able to see that skin correctly. And, as Tim points out, he's just totally validating this whole view. I totally agree with him.
Lighting is so important. Yeah, it's like, all the big time, makeup artists out there travel with their own lights. I know.
Absolutely.
But sure, that Sam Fine has one, and I know that, when Kevin was still alive, he carried his own light. Frank Cooper carries his own light.
There you go.
It's important to have because at times, even in the hotel rooms, if you're doing, event makeups and things like that, when I work with people in the hotel room, I have my own light. I bring my own light with me. And I think, it's one of those things that people should invest in.
Yeah.
So there's no point in going, oh, well, shoot, the lighting sucks, so I can't help you. I can't figure it out. Because, a lot of us, I think, when we go to the hotel room to makeup, we rely so much on the big glass window.
Yeah.
To open up the draperies.
Yeah.
And hoping that the sunlight is actually gonna be there for you, but it's not always gonna be there for you.
And that's full spectrum light right there. That's what he's talking about. That's 55K lighting right there. Is that sunlight, noonday sun?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get it, you can definitely duplicate that, and that's the best light. You will be able to go on set and make your adjustments that you need in your makeup, because I basically look at that is that, when you white balance the camera white balances at white light. So basically what you're doing is you're white balancing your makeup. So you're on the same spectrum as the video camera. And if there's lighting adjustments and you have to make, and there's chroma saturation adjustments in the camera, you'll be able to do them the way camera's doing them, because your makeup is basically balanced at the same temperature white light is. So that's from a pure physics point of view, but it's not going to give you any trouble. Whereas you go in there and you go, oh, what's wrong with my makeup? It's looking orange. It's doing this. It's, well, because you didn't balance your makeup. You didn't read the skin correctly when you were matching your makeup to skin in the kind of lighting that you needed to have to read skin tonalities. It's all full circle here, definitely.
So, Tim, going back to your scenario, so basically if you have an actress or an artist and you're doing their makeup and, you take them outside and you see that, it's not great, Technicolor is asking in the chat room, what's the best approach to express that to your talent without looking like a moron or having them feel like you don't know what you're doing?
But I don't think most of the time I don't think the talent is actually going to look at you like a moron.
Yeah,
I think
they're going to appreciate
because the actors are actually seeing what you're seeing in the trailer when you step out into the daylight. Actually, you go, don't make a big deal out of it. It's like, that's something that I'm not liking here. Can we just go back in a trailer? Let's fix that really quickly.
Right.
And actually, don't forget, actors and actresses are very vain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So they want you to fix it.
And they really want you to really take your time and correct everything that you need to be corrected. And I think they would totally appreciate you doing that versus going, I'd rather do that in front of my actress than going onto the set
Yeah.
And doing that, you find up the whole crew and then
yeah.
make the whole production wait.
Or going on set and having someone like another actress point that out to them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, when you're touching somebody up on the set and you didn't see that one brush hair, but the other actress is like, you know, that's embarrassing enough.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's like, ooh, okay, you put a little too much translucent powder on me, and I'm a little white.
Right.
You know, rather than that, I mean, it's, you know, so it just, excuse me. But, I mean, literally, I'm sure most actors and actresses will totally appreciate you pulling the back in the trailer and do the correction in their verses
yeah.
on the set.
I agree.
Suzanne, question.
Yes.
I know that we all have to learn to work with different skin tones, and we need to know color theory. But does HD have a different effect? The HD camera have a different effect on different skin tones? You know, more so one than the other. Like, are there any issues that we need to be concerned about, like with one particular skin tone? Another.
And in my experience in working in HD, you know, HD began here in Washington, D.C., so we're really driving the train for the rest of the country here. And I started working in it about 12 years ago. And seeing the progression of cameras and how insanely accurate they're becoming, especially with all of this lens technology that's happening and... The thing that you really have to be the most careful about is not any one particular skin tone, but actually the multi-tones in the skin, because you can't flatten the skin out. And especially what I find, especially with African-American skin tones, is they're often 2 to 3 different tonalities. And sometimes they are, you know, darker around the perimeter of the face and lighter in the center, or they may be darker across the brow or darker across the chin. And makeup artists have, you know, what they do is they just try to find a mid-tone color and just color the face with it, and you can't do that in HD. You have to keep the life in the face, and the life of the skin is all those different tonalities. And in men's skin, that's another issue, is that they have different tonalities in their skin. So you have to meet those top tone tonalities, I should say. Everyone has the same undertone that they were born with. That never changes, whether you're warm, neutral, or cool. You were born that way. But what changes is when you tan is the lightness to darkness, the value of your skin tonalities. If you've got hyperpigmentation, a lot of makeup artists totally mistake hyperpigmentation or hypercirculation in the skin as a color, and they'll match that. That's not their color. That is simply a skin issue that they have that needs to be dealt with. What I use is I'll identify a couple of different colors in the skin, and I'll do the stippling technique with that to bring that under control. But it's using the colors that are inherently that you see in their skin under good lighting, of course, to stipple out some of those skin issues that are not a color but an issue with the skin. So I think it's important that when you do your makeup, that you keep the life into the skin. You keep the levels of it, as Sarah likes to say. She says, keep the levels alive in the face. And that's really true for HD. So it isn't about just picking out one color and just doing the skin in one color, because nobody is one color. I haven't run into someone that was just one color. Sometimes there are people where I see 2 prominent colors, but never less than 2. And always it seems to be in the triangle area of the face, because people, it's just kind of a rule of thumb that I've kind of adopted that works, especially for HD. It's just the way I approach the face. As I look at the triangle area first, and then I'll look at the perimeter, and then Sometimes another, as I'm talking to them or preparing or looking at them under the lights, you know, I can determine. Oftentimes there's three. Sometimes that third color can be very faint. But, you know, and I'll see what I can get away with. Of course, you know, time is always a factor, but it's a skill that you develop by working on a lot of faces. You do need to practice. And this goes back to what Tim was saying, that, you know your skills, you know, practice your skills. Color theory is really important. Pigment color theory, makeup color theory is different from graphic arts color theory. It's not the same. Pigment color theory for makeup is a little bit different. So, and I could go on and on about this, but I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but basically that's my view, you know, and I'm sure Tim has some things to add to this, too.
No, I think you're covering it all. I'm like, I'm learning more from you than I've learned. I
have lots to learn, you know, Tim. The day I say I don't have anything to learn is the day I need to leave the business. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the day I'm leaving.
Suzanne, you talked about Brett Hogan
mm-hmm.
earlier, and you always mention Brett Hogan because I know you really like them, and you were saying that their cream bases are an exact match to their airbrush colors.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
no, I was just going to say, and I've used their cream bases, and I absolutely love them. I use them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought like a sample pack of their airbrush colors, but I haven't had a chance to use them yet.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Graftopian that you really love when it comes to HD?
Okay, that's a whole show. let me nutshell it. You know, aside from the fact that I had a hand in helping to develop the line along with Brad Look from Star Trek and Barry Koper and a few other people, when Graftopian really said, you know what, we see HD. They wanted to be offer a line that was a serious line for HD use, and they wanted it to be extremely accurate to skin tones, not fashion shades, because a lot of makeup out there is fashion shades, not real skin tones. And so they came to several of us artists and said, well, what do you need for HD? What is it that you see? And I said right away, you've got to divide out your colors into values and temperatures, because that's the way camera reads skin tone. I mean, without a doubt, basic 101. And they did that. And then Brad helped develop shades to some of the popular colors in some of the other brands that were being used, like RCMA, and different ones that he was using in his film work. And they went out and they tested these on skins, a whole slew of different ranges of skins. And then I was given the task of dividing all of these 62 shades into warms, cools, and neutrals. And that took about 3 weeks to do. And then they tested all that out for accuracy. And we started, you know, using it. And what I loved was they came up with a formulation that was you could use on all skin types, because, for instance, with RCMA, one of the things that, besides the fact that the color range is really outdated now, when you look at an HD, it's a very outdated color range. They need some updating, some serious updating with that. But the texture and the coverage and the finish is extremely important in HD. One of the problems that we have, especially when we're doing some celebrity artists, that has had a fair amount of,
work.
Well, it's more than that, Tim. I mean, it's like, you know, laser, mm-hmm. prescription creams. These products totally, completely change the lipid layer of the skin. They don't have normal skin anymore. They have skin that is difficult to work with. And one of the things that knocked RCMA out of the picture for me was, and no offense to RCMA or anything, because, you know, I still really like it, but, you know, it's just, it's the texture. It would not stick to altered skin. It would not. There was, you couldn't get it to be smooth, and I would try to rework it. I would mix it down. I would dissolve it down, but it kicked up too much shine. The castor in it just really kicks up the shine, and it just became too much of a maintenance. And with Graftovian's Wax Hybrid, I don't have any problems with any kinds of skins. I mean, I can put it on any skin type. And because of its near 80% pigment-to-vehicle ratio, I can get this down to the most transparent coverage, yet really have good coverage because of the high degree of pigmentation in it. It just wears really, really well. It has long continuity. I mean, it looks the same from hour 1 to hour 10. And this is great for brides because they're, you know, a bride is an actress starting in her own stage production with a supporting cast. You know, that's really what a wedding is. So she needs to look at all of her important points in her day. She needs to look, she needs to have continuity. And she needs to look just as fresh as hour 10 as she did at hour 1. And, you know, Graftovian just really meets a lot of the stringent requirements that I have. And I, you know, it's rare that a makeup company really listens to what makeup artists want. It's very, very rare.
True.
And I will say that they do an exceptional job. They just come out with brow powders. I told them that you've got to come out with brow powders. You have to come out with brow powders because this is something that is missing in your line. And lo and behold, they did. I mean, they really listen to artists. I think it's great. So I've gone on long and long enough about this. But the fact that they came out with all of their...
I'm sorry.
He said he's ordering one. He sold.
I'm ordering one. I'm so
well,
behind.
Well, you know, test it out to be sure. But I'll tell you what, Tim, it has made my job so easy because it's like half the work's been done for you. Mm-hmm. It's divided into values. It's divided into temperatures. That's half the job right there. All you have to do is stick your talent under lighting. Okay, what's the temperature? What's the value of my talent? Okay. Boom, there's a warm palette, there's a cool palette, there's a neutral palette. Boom, 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 it's done. It literally just cut my time in half because for a lot of years I was mixing my own neutral colors from different brands, just kind of, you know, making my own little line, you know, of things to use that I could go to very quickly. Because in the D.C. area here, I just do video, but you have to work very, very quickly. A lot of the, you know, I do a lot of political stuff here, and it's mm-hmm. like you have like 90 seconds or 3 minutes. You know, you have your makeup
right.
down to. I have my makeup down to a 30-second application. I've got it down to a 90-second app. You know, I do different things for different situations. But whatever helps you work quickly yet accurately, I'm sold. You know, that's the deal for me.
So, Suzanne, can you tell us about, I'm online looking at some of the products that you sell. Can you tell us about that stick-up light kit?
It is a little luminaire that is 150-watt output, and which is just enough spill that you need on the side of a face to get a reading. Mm-hmm. It's like the size of your hand. And it comes with the extension arms that you can clip we sell a quarter blue with it. There's 4 sheets of quarter blue. And you can put this in the bottom of your makeup case and just go. That's how small it is. But it's very powerful.
Does it clamp on to something?
What I do is I run a cable tie. I have a cable tie on the back of mine so I can hang it actually on any kind of light stand. Or you can clip it to a mirror.
Okay.
It's very, very, I should probably put some pictures up here of different examples of how people have used them, but, you know, I just when I started the store, that was one of the things was, you know, makeup artists need access to light that they know is going to allow them to read, all, you know, their skin, their the talent of their skin correctly, and so that they would never have, be without it. Because there's, you know, light kits can be up anywhere upwards from $300 to $500 if you,
right.
if you get, you know, buy a little Pro Light or a Tota or any one of those or a Mole Richardson Pepper or whatever. But, you know, and also portability. I mean, you know, you have to break these things down and put them in a bag, and that's an additional thing onto your kit, whereas this
right.
little guy can go into the bottom of a makeup case. It's just
that's
so little.
What's your website?
You can go to paintandpowdercosmetics.com.
Okay.
You have
no, you got
and
no
I, yeah,
Girl,
I feel
you
like
I'm
kind
me
of
stop.
Taking this over here. I didn't mean for this to be a...
oh, no, it's quite all right.
we have like 4 quick minutes left, but I have a caller calling, so I want to get the caller in
sure.
really quick before
okay.
we go off the line. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, how are you all? This is Gabby calling from Baltimore. How are you all?
I recognize the number.
I was just calling. Thank you so much for the information. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
I was just calling just to say I love Graftovian this season. Is there any way you can tell them that they can possibly make like an artist palette with everything in there?
define everything.
Right. We would just love for makeup brands to just make palettes that include eyeshadow, lipstick, blush, powder, eyeliner.
How would you get that
one
palette into it? How would you hold that one palette? That would be a ginormous palette.
They would hold it. You would also provide a bag for them to put that in.
Exactly. Well, at least they can start with a palette with all the foundations. You know, a large palette with all the foundations
right.
that they have. So the break. I love the breakdown because it
to
keeps
be,
me nice.
I'll tell you what. To be really honest with you, I think they've done it really well because, quite honestly, I only carry the warm and the neutral palettes because my experience has been over the years that if you sample, out of every 20 skin tones that you sample, if you line 20 people up and you put them under the light for and you check their temperature and value, or their undertones, you're going to find that 9 of those people will be warm, 8
right.
of those people will be neutral. That's the most overlooked population up until Graftovian
uh-huh.
addressed them. 8
yep.
people will be neutral, and only 3 will be cool. Cool is your occasional undertone that I run across.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the 30-some-odd years that I've been doing makeup, I mean, out of every 20 people I do, I might have 2 or 3 cools. So my kit is keyed towards warm and neutral. And if I need to mix down a cool tone, then I'll throw in some adjusters to do that because I just don't get them
true.
That often.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's according to the range of the skin tones. And I've personally built my kit out to be warm and neutral in my foundation products. So that's just kind of a little tip that, you know, I'm throwing
okay.
out there. But generally, that's been the rule of thumb for me. For Tim, probably maybe the same for you. You know, is cool an occasional undertone that you find?
I'm just looking at your website right now.
I know you.
I'm going to like add one to the cart.
You guys, but having one palette for everything that would be neat. But I don't think that would be economically feasible for the company. But they're always open, you know.
Well, if you have the palette, divided by cool, warm, you know,
mm-hmm.
neutral tones. I think that's. I mean, mm-hmm. that's you know. I think.
I actually believe I've seen a palette, I want to say from Graftovian. It wasn't like one of those huge things, but it held like, I think one of their regular palettes hold like, what, 5 or 6 colors?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Well, they have the small little 5-color palettes, and then they have the 18-color palettes.
I think that's what I've seen. I've seen the 18
yeah,
color
yeah.
palettes.
Yeah, it's the 18 color palettes. All the warms are in an 18 color palette. All the cools
right.
and all the neutrals are all all separated on one. So I just carry, you know, I just carry the, you know, the big, they're called super palettes is what they're called. And then there's a lip super palette as well. And the new brow palette that's coming out is 8 colors. And with brows, you know, you have to be really careful in HD because so many artists, and I'm speaking novice artists, try to match the brow, and you can't. You have to come at least 2 colors under the color, and it's actually a multi-tone. There's a whole process that I go through, and I will tell you that there is a new video coming out. I can't say anything more other than next time I'm on, I'll be able to talk about it more, but there's a really wonderful video coming out for HD, for makeup for HD.
From Graftopia, or you just can't say that either?
Well, I guess I'm going to say yes. They haven't officially announced it yet, but we shot it a couple of weeks ago, so, and that was the shoot I was referring to, so.
Right.
I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little, but it is the first makeup video for HD. How to apply makeup for and it's all in that, and those, we shot it in those HD SLRs that gave me so much trouble.
You know we're all going to go buy one when it comes out.
Well, we targeted this towards the novice artist. You know, we're calling it HD Makeup 101. And it's for the novice artist who's done some media work, has a good fundamental skills platform, but really needs to refine the skills. And it's all about how to use the Graftopia products. It's about their product line. And, you know, I'm demonstrating in the video from start to finish. It just opens, boom, you know, gets right to it from the end. And you'll be able to stop and start the video and practice it. So we aimed it more towards the novice artist. But I think that, you know, the more seasoned pros might find it interesting, too.
We sure will. Doesn't matter. We're going to go get it anyway.
Well, it helps. It really helps you to see the product line, how to use it. And we do talk about matching skin tone in there and how important it is and how to do it. So hopefully people find it very helpful. And that's one of the reasons I agreed to do it was to really help artists out there, you know, with this medium that's exploding. I mean, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so crazy out there.
We're just waiting for you to put out your book, HD.
I know. Lots to do. One woman show here.
And how many colors did you say was in the brow palette?
8 colors, and they're perfectly edited for brows. You're not going to find a super dark color in there because that will make the brows come off really artificial. Even people who have seemingly black colored brows to the eye, they're really not that dark in HD, and you can really overdo them. So these were carefully chosen so that you can bring in at least 2 tonalities to the brow to actually make it. Groom it and shape it and color it all in one step. So, and there's a technique that in this video that I show how to do that. There's a step by step. So, it's in this video as well. But you know they have the lip super palette too, which is great. So if you know about the lip super palette, which is all I use anymore. And I know I'm just so pro Graftopian here, but I'm all about anything that makes your job fast. Easy, quick, with great results. You know,
mm-hmm.
like the you know it's just great for me anyway.
But it's cool. I mean,
quick and easy is always good.
Quick and easy is very good. Yes.
Yeah, and it's okay that you're pro Graftopia because then we've just learned a little bit more about the line. So this is things we didn't know. So that's cool.
Well, one extra thing I could add is that, you know, airbrush vehicles come in 3 different hybrids. You have water hybrids, you have silicone hybrids, and then you have alcohol hybrids. One of the things that really attracted me was the airbrush formulation that they came out, which actually Brad Look was the one that really tweaked that formula. because he was looking for a color for Scott Bakula, and he wanted a certain formulation to use, and so Graftovian formulated a color especially for Scott Bakula on Enterprise, and this formulation has a touch of acrylic copolymer in it. It's not a glycerin in water. There's other different hybrids, but it's a water and copolymer hybrid. And what I found with this when I started using was that it totally gave a bend to the complexion in the HD camera. When I first used it, the big test that I had is I had an actor that, and this is the dreaded thing that you dread in HD, is when you get an actor that's almost albino. Really, he looked like this kid looked like he just rose from the dead with no color in his face. He was so pale, and I was like, "What am I going to do with this kid in HD to put some life in his face without it looking fake?" And I just thought, "Okay, I need some texture here. I need something that's going to bend his face a little bit in camera." And I had just got this was about 6 years ago, I can't remember how long it was, but I had just been given this stuff to use, and I just said, okay, I'm going to do this. And so I chose a couple of colors that seemed to give him a little more lift. But the finish, when I looked at him in the monitor and I saw how more lifelike he was, that this color had kind of wrapped itself natively to the skin, it looks so native to his skin, even though I had bumped his color up a little bit. That extra little bit of acrylic in that mixture made all the difference in the world. I was like hooked, absolutely hooked. And I thought, you know, if this formula can do that for this lifeless skin, which is the most difficult skin to work with in HD, that was such a testimony. To this day, that's still a testimony to that, to this line. And the fact is that it hardly needs any maintenance, and it's great for all skin tones. It wears beautifully. I might have to maybe powder it towards after lunch, you know, a little bit, to kind of, you know, how skin kind of warms up and kind of warms through it a little bit, so you have to maintain it a little bit. But it hardly needs any maintenance. But I'll tell you what, that was a real grueling test, and that just sold me on the airbrush right there. The one thing that personally I can't use in HD, and this is just, you know, a personal decision, is that silicone. You just got to avoid silicone, because silicone is an oil, and I don't care how it's compounded, it is an oil that will eventually break through on the skin, and it doesn't like to be maintained. Silicone-based foundations don't like maintenance. And if you start hitting it with powder, or you start manipulating it or doing something, it actually will go dead on the skin. I tried it once. I had to pull it off at lunchtime and redo the skin. It just didn't work for me. And this is just me, but maybe, you know, there's differences of opinion out there. But I just don't think silicone works in HD at all.
Hmm. That's another show, Suzanne.
Probably, but... that's just been my experience. I don't think that it works for me at all. So anyway.
Well, really, that actually is another show. I mean, maybe you can come on one night and just talk about the different, you know, airbrush makeups that are out there, and, you know, what in your opinion, what that you found, you know, what's good, what's not.
It's not about brands. I don't like to talk about brands. I like to talk about the chemistry of it.
Right.
Because if you're a makeup artist, you are a cosmetic chemist. You are automatically a cosmetic chemist. You have to know what it is. You know, this is a substance applied to a surface that has an end result. So you really need to know what it is that you're using, and what's, you know, the skin type that you're applying it to, and what the end result would be, and what the continuity, and what the wear, you know, what the resulting texture is going to look like. There's a lot of things to going into being a makeup artist than just, you know, applying color to the face and that's the end of it. For me, and for Tim as well, it's about getting wear out of that, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
yeah,
it
yeah,
totally
I'm
going
to step in here because I'm sure he's, you know, he can add a lot to this, too.
Girl, no, I'm just listening to you. I'm learning a lot more.
I know, right?
You
can't help it.
It's been a long time.
We can't help Suzanne, but just
well, you know, and I'm just probably echoing, you know, Tim's thoughts here, but you really do have to be somewhat of a cosmetic chemist. You can't just you got to understand why you do the things you do. Not that well, this looks good on that, but why does it? You know, and why
right.
do you do that? And why? What do you have that that makes this end result happen? And it's not only being a cosmetic chemist, but you've got to be an electronic makeup artist. You've got to understand, and that's the reason why I love doing these technology and techniques, is because where else are you going to get all this kind of information that you really need to know? You need to know what you're coming up against and how these formats are becoming. I mean, there's no end to what HD is morphing into. It's now we've got 3D HD. We've got that whole new type of makeup that came in with Avatar, where now it blends with electronic special effects. You know, Tegan Taylor just has invented a whole new process of makeup, phosphoric makeups, and working digitally with the actors in planning these makeups. And you know, if you remember a few shows back, we talked about that.
Yes.
You know, there's just so much more stuff that you got to be, you know, up on top of and aware of so that you can evolve with the craft.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not, I mean, the craft's not stopping. This
right,
is
right.
Every day. You have to evolve with it. And I think, you know, like a lot of people out here in the business go, how come I'm not working? Because y'all not, you guys still doing the makeup from the 50s. So, you know. And you got, am I right? Am I right?
You're right.
Tim, I have a question for you, and that is, are you out? You're out in L.A., right?
I'm L.A. based right now. I'm shooting a show in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Do you think personally that, from what you know of the makeup schools out there, are they still teaching the old-fashioned curriculum, or do you think that they're?
I don't know. It's like it's been a long time, but you know, I think a lot of times I think like MUD, you know, school like MUD and you know, are getting the younger, a little more hipper teachers who are actually updating the curriculums a little bit more.
Good to hear.
You know, like for me, like when I went to school, I didn't go to makeup school. I went to a trade school that taught
mm-hmm.
makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, you know, union makeup artists who was teaching classes. And I remember one time when I went to class, you know, I went the first time and I finished the course. So I was like, you know what, I might go again. I might go do it. And on the second time I went in, During the introduction, the meeting, the registration process of it, the open house, I raised my hand up and I said, you know what, I took this class prior to this, and we didn't really concentrate on woman of color. You know, would that be something that we would be teaching or anything like that? And I swear to God that the instructor looked at me and said, oh, actually, probably about 80% of the work you're going to be doing is going to be on white women. So we just touch on it, but we don't really think anything about it.
Oh, I forgot you said that before.
Man,
huh?
Man.
You know, and I made my career working with black women,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, from Janet Jackson to Tina Turner to Naomi Campbell, you know. I'm like,
can I take a class from you? I'd love to take a class with you. I bet you have so much to teach. Just from your field experience. I love to learn from people with a huge amount of field experience.
You know,
I'm a lifelong learner, so.
Oh, honey, I think we all have to be. You know, we all have to be.
Mm.
Yeah, like you said, you know what? Once you think you can't learn anymore, you might as well just go home.
Mm-hmm.
Pack yourself up.
Well, if you ever do a class, I'm there.
I'm working on a book, so we'll see what happens with that.
Good.
Know? Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people have asked me to teach classes, but I'm like, you know, it's one of those situations is like, I'll talk for 2 hours, and then I have nothing else to say. So, it's really not, you know, it's one of those things. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Now, what else do I say? You know? Just like
well,
when the girls...
You have a wealth of experience to share. There's no doubt about it. There's just like you said, you know, there's a lot of things that just aren't covered that need to be covered.
No, exactly. And
I think
it's irresponsible of the school to not cover it. You know, I think it's so irresponsible of the teaching facilities to not even. Dealing with it, you know what I mean? And it's like, you could teach the makeup, you know, like the way they did back in the 50s, but at the same time, you have to update your process a little bit more.
Well, HD is going to demand it. You know, within the next 10 years, there's no way you can not avoid it in the media realm. Even if you do bridal work, all bridal videography and photography has HD capability. Most bridal videographers, you know, are shooting in HD. They're not shooting in standard def anymore. So, right then and there, you know, you have, if you do a lot of brides or if you're only going to do bridal work, you've got a mandate right there. And it is 1080p. Everything's going to progressive. There, you know, interlace is going away. Everything's going to progressive. So that it's a tighter scan. It's a better resolution scan. So. And you know, here's the thing. This is what I tell my students in HDMU is when you the size of TV sets are what 75 inches now. I think on the market, I believe that you can now buy a 75 inch 1080p television. Think about your makeup being. Shown on that screen.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you make up to. I tell my students right off the bat. I have a 65 inch piece of cardboard, you know, the size of a TV set, and I put it right up next to the monitor. I said, this is the size that your makeup can be seen in. That's what you need to be looking. In fact, I'm probably going to upgrade the studio monitor up to at least a 55 inch. If not a 60-inch this next year, budget permitting, just so people can see what your makeup's really going to look like, because that's really what you're making up to is that consumer in viewing right there. If you're not making up to the studio monitor, you're making it up to the consumer television
mm-hmm.
set. That's who's going to see your work.
And, also,
and they're now up to 75-inch screens out there.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine your work being seen on a 75-inch screen, you know, an average, and you know, that's kind of what I put in their heads right away, is it's, you know, you want it to pass muster at 75 inches, consumer monitor.
Again, Suzanne, you leave us all speechless.
Well, I was hoping I wasn't going to hear crickets, you know. but you know, that's really the reality of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just like get your mind thinking in that direction. And there are a 103-inch screen, I believe, coming out on the market within the next 6 months by Panasonic.
Well, aside from
so
that,
it's
just,
insane.
Just look
this
at
is
that.
Huh?
I mean, aside from that, just look at the movie screen.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. I was just talking about television, but you're right. You know, definitely.
I mean, look at the things are going in that route. Things are shooting. You know, some movies are shooting in HD. You know.
Well,
you just look at that too.
I think by next year, I think, and this is just my own personal prediction, but I believe that that film is just going to be a transfer medium. I honestly, truly believe that it is going away as principal photography, and that it's just going to be
I'm not sure. I don't know how much I agree with that just yet. You know, because a lot of people feel that, you know,
it's the control, I think, is at the director's level.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you on that. I think the directors are going to be the one that are going to control that. But, you know, the studios are going to press it the other way because of the budget.
That's like my show, too. It's like, but my show, we're still shooting in 16. Okay, we're still in the Stone Ages. But they brought out, like 2 seasons ago, they brought out video camera just to shoot the video, just to see how, you know, and transferring it to, you
are
know.
Are you using video assist
LA.
On your, are you using video assist with your 16?
No. We have the old-fashioned monitors.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, you know, but I mean, like, they brought out the red cam onto my show to shoot see how the look would be and things like that. Everything looks fine.
Good.
But I spoke to a couple of producers about it in L.A., and I said, realistically, is it saving any money to the studio? And when you have to figure the cost of hiring another full-time camera operator to deal with the transferring of the stuff and things like that. And, you know, it pretty much doesn't really saving that much money to shoot on HD, you know.
Really?
But, yeah, that's what I found out from one of the producers.
Mm-hmm.
That it's financially, it's the cost of saving versus how we're shooting it now.
On
it's
16,
not that,
sure, yeah. But that's, yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure we're just getting the scrap footage,
Oh. You mean the end rolls?
Yeah, the end rolls on it. You know?
No, they're called short ends.
Thank you. That's what I was like. Yeah, that thing.
Short ends. There's even a company called Short Ends that distributes those. Yeah.
Yeah, because we changed our film a little too much. Yeah, but I mean, you know, hey, the way I look at it, wherever the industry is going to go, I'm going to go with it. So,
absolutely,
you know,
that's true. And knowledge is power, right, guys? Seriously,
right? That's right. Absolutely.
You know, if you know enough about lighting that you can go on a set, because honestly and truly, I can only speak about, you know, where I work in the DC metro area.
Mm-hmm.
But it is all about defending your makeup and lighting.
Oh,
for me,
right.
It is all about, because I pretty much know all the lighting guys here, and you know, when they don't question me when I ask them to, you know, can you back up that halo light a little bit because you're, you know, it's getting too hot on what you. I can sit there and I can totally help them light the scene. I mean, because I understand it that well, and. You do. You have to, if you know your makeup is accurate, you have done the makeup in full spectrum lighting and you know that it's going to balance with camera, then you can confidently go on set and you can defend your makeup to the lighting guys because they aren't necessarily lighting the talent, they're lighting the set.
Yep.
Talent's just noise in there. And I'm just speaking from my experience, but you know, they just kind of overlook the fact that they're going to have talent in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just too busy making, you know, the set look according to their thing. So, you know, I have sometimes step in there, and I usually win the arguments because they know, you know, what I'm talking about. And they know that I've done the makeup correctly. So it took a while for, you know, the dust to settle in, you know, in this area. So we all have a respect for each other. But it really is about defending your good makeup in lighting. And getting them to adjust it according to the talent's need in lighting. It truly is. That's part of the battle right there. So it behooves you to really understand lighting. It really does. Because honestly and truly, there's when I moved from the West Coast, because most of my career was in L.A. before I moved to the East Coast here about 15 years ago, and honestly, Janice and Denise, it was like coming to another planet, really. Yeah, I have to say, because things that were done here, you would never get away with in L.A., ever, never. And I had to really adjust, you know, my thinking and, you know, the training that I had. But when HD came on the scene, everybody was kind of at the same disadvantage. So everybody was kind of relearning things. But still, a lot of the way lighting is done here is not exactly, you know, where I came from. So the way that they were, and a lot of lighting people are, you know, still experimenting with different things. And now we have LEDs that have come on the scene, which makes lighting a little more accurate. Actually, it makes lighting a little bit better. I think LEDs are going to be a very positive thing because they're more accurate. They don't have temperature spikes. You don't have green spikes or you don't have blue spikes. You have a constant temperature that it will read out or illuminate out the accuracy of what it's rated to be, which is really important. So, you know, I guess moral of the story is that learn all you can about lighting so that you can be the best defense for your talent in a not-so-skilled video environment.
Right.
Well, you guys, with that being said, we are out of time. We've been out of time, but it's too good to stop. So thank you so much. This was supposed to be an interview with Kaya Wright, but Kaya's job ran over. So I am so thankful for the ram in the bush that came by way of Suzanne Patterson. And thank you, Tim, for calling in. We do appreciate the both of you.
I appreciate Tim so much. It's wonderful meeting him. He's just terrific, and I just can't wait for his book to come out.
Well, Same here, and I'm going on your site. I'm going to do some shopping.
Maybe, Suzanne, if you like his book, you can sell it on your site.
I would absolutely sell his book on my site. You betcha. So you just let me know. Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, it's actually going to be the first. Interactive book. We just trying to deal with the program for the book. So
wow, nice.
Do you have a date, a published date in mind?
Probably looking about probably 12.
Okay.
Yeah, because I want to do it right, and
yeah.
I want to do it right. I want to take my time to do it. So
best wishes on that. Yeah. Well, that's good because nobody's really doing anything like that. So we hope you get your book out first.
Oh, I will.
Well, good things are worth waiting for, too. Definitely.
Right.
So thank you guys both very much. Again, we do appreciate it. This is good stuff, Suzanne, I'm telling you. And I guess because you can't get back until the 28th of October.
Right.
You got a lot of it in tonight, so,
well,
you know.
Right, exactly. But one thing I was going to ask you, Suzanne, before the show started and you didn't get a chance to really hear me, I thought maybe if it was okay with you, maybe like to have you on the 28th, but like I guess 2 weeks before then, maybe we could have Sarah on and maybe you can just kind of let her know what your plans were of what you wanted to talk about. But if not, we could just wait for the 28th.
I have no idea what I'm going to be talking about on the 28th, but I'm sure I'll have some experience to share between now and then with all the stuff that's going on production-wise.
I think I just meant like a if you wanted to keep to your every 2 weeks, the week that you weren't going to be able to make it, maybe you could have Sarah on and just kind of.
Oh sure. Well, whatever would work for everyone. Sure. You know.
Well, it's up to you. It's totally up to you.
Well, no, I think Sarah's always a great person to have on. She works in live broadcast, which is people don't understand, and this is the first thing we teach in HDMU, is that there's two echelons, two platforms of high def. There's live broadcast, live to tape to edit broadcast. Okay, and most of my work is live to tape to edit to broadcast. She is in a live venue. She works in live HD that goes live every single day. So her perspective coupled with, you know, my perspective is the, you know, is like the full circle of HD capability. Live broadcast is a little bit different than live to tape to edit broadcast. And, you know, we go into that, the two different platforms and requirements for that at HDMU. But she definitely brings a wonderful perspective from live broadcast, because that's what she works in, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're on. And when it goes live, there's nothing else you can do. It's got to be right, because once it's out there on the airwaves, it's that's it. So she brings an excellent perspective, which is, I think you know, having both views is a real benefit to artists.
I still can't wait until you both are on the show together.
Oh, that would be a hoot! Yeah,
I can't wait for that.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely plan that after IMATS. You know, get back to my mat. So, for sure.
Is there another IMAT?
Oh, my goodness. Where is there not an IMAT?
Right.
Oh, really? I know. Toronto. Well, Toronto's where we're launching the video.
Gotcha.
And then...
when is that?
Toronto is in the first part of November. I believe the 8th and the 9th. I have to look at the calendar, but... and then there's London. And then... New York.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait for
first
that.
First time ever, New York.
First time ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's plenty of makeup shows, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, plenty.
There is.
We don't lack for any in this, on this planet now.
I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, I've been told the IMAT show in L.A. I was kind of surprised I was able to make it to that one.
Did you go to that one?
Yeah, he was there.
I wish I had known you.
Yeah, he was there.
Did you stop by the Graftobian booth?
I don't think I did, because there was just a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yes, there were.
Yeah, because, Tim, I think you were there on that Saturday, and that's the day that you could barely move around the place.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You should suggest to Michael Keyes to have a Friday night cocktail and have all the vendors there and the professionals come in.
Yeah, I agree.
There's been some changes as a result of Pasadena.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get drunk pro in there, you will spend money.
Yeah.
You know.
Wait a minute. What did you just say?
Huh?
What did you just say?
I just say, if you get drunk pros in there, we'll spend money. Hello?
That's
right.
Funny.
Good
night, Tim.
Good night, y'all.
Thank you both for calling in.
You bet. It was fun.
I enjoyed it
so much. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Talk to you soon.
All right, bye, you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.